I have some one-liners I can't resist offering to you to start the sermon. It's important to be philosophical in a sermon, to be thoughtful. So here are some thoughts I offer you. I intend to live forever. So far, so good. I thought about being born again, but my mother refused. When everything's coming your way, you're in the wrong lane. When it rains, why don't sheep shrink? What if the hokey pokey is really what it is all about? This last one is really poignant now. In America, anyone can be president. That's one of the risks we take. Laughter. What a joyous thing laughter is. It's good for the body, it's good for the psyche, and it's good for the soul. Studies have shown that those who enjoy humor and laugh often heal more quickly or experience better pain relief than those who are more serious. I read somewhere that Native Hawaiians have dozens of different words for laughter, depending on the kind of laughter it is. Laughter clearly plays a central role in their culture, as does snow for Native Alaskans, who have many words for that ever-present substance. Laughter comes in many forms, from a giggle, a chuckle, a titter, to a guffaw, a roar, or a deep, resounding belly laugh. I'm sure we've all had the experience of breaking into uncontrollable laughter, maybe as children behind a textbook in school, or around a table with friends or family, or on cue when a movie or play or TV show or written joke captures our funny bone. Whatever set us off may not really even be so funny, but sometimes it tickles us in just the right way, and we give in to the laughter. We let it take us out of ourselves. And that is one of the great gifts of humor and laughter. It helps us transcend our everyday lives for a time, to rise above our personal situation and our usual sense of what reality is, and perceive the world from a different perspective. Through a comic perception, for example, the comic exaggeration of someone's real flaws in a caricature, or through social or political satire, we can get an insight into the true nature of what is being satirized. The philosopher George Santayana once said, "In merciless and rollicking comedy, life is caught in the act." There are those serious-minded people who disparage laughter and comedy. Some consider comedy in a religious context to be wickedly sacrilegious. But in fact, religions have long used humor to help people see and to help them understand their truths. There is even some humor in the Bible. As for instance, when God tells Sarah and Abraham that they will have a child. Sarah is 89, Abraham is 99. And Sarah laughs. And what she says is, "My husband Abraham is too old." Or when Jesus talks about being careful not to point out the speck, the mote in someone's eye while you're carrying a log in your own eye. Think about it. It's quite a funny image. In the Sufi and Zen traditions, humorous stories are used to instruct or to disarm the rational mind as a means to enlightenment or deeper understanding. In Sufism, there are, for instance, the stories of Nasruddin, a Persian mullah or religious leader. He lived in the 13th century. He was described as both wise and foolish, clever and stupid, mad and brilliant. And often he is the butt of the joke in his own stories. There's one in which he loses a ring in his bedroom and he comes out and he's out on his porch in the sunlight looking around. A man passes him and says, "What are you looking for, Mullah?" And he says, I lost a ring in the bedroom. He says, "Well, why are you looking out here?" And of course he says, "The light's much better out here." Here's another of his stories. Once Nasruddin was invited to deliver a sermon. When he got to the pulpit, he asked, "Do you know what I am going to say?" The audience replied, "No." So he announced, "I have no desire to speak to people who don't even know what I will be talking about." And he left. The people felt embarrassed and called him back again the next day. This time, when he asked the same question, the people replied, "Yes." So Nasruddin said, "Well, since you already know what I'm going to say, I won't waste any more of your time." And he left. Now the people were really perplexed. They decided to try once more and invited the mullah again to come and speak. Once again, he asked the same question, "Do you know what I am going to say?" Now the people were prepared. So half of them answered yes, while the other half replied no. So Nasruddin said, "Let the half who know what I am going to say, tell it to the half who don't." And he left. In the Zen Buddhist tradition, koans, or riddles with touches of humor in them, are given to students to meditate on in order to help unbind their minds from the habit of intellectualization. The late Western Zen practitioner Alan Watts called this holy cunning. For instance, when posing the question, "Which is moving, a flag or the wind?" a Zen master might respond, "Neither. The mind is moving." Or a master might say to a pupil, "If you have a staff, I will give it to you. If you have no staff, I will take it away from you." Zen also has little instructive stories tinged with humor, like the following. Two monks were traveling together when they arrived at a river. At the river, they discovered a woman struggling to get across. Without a second thought, the older of the two monks asked the woman if she needed help, then swiftly picked her up and carried her across to the other bank. The actions of the older monk greatly troubled the younger monk, who allowed his feelings to fester for several miles while they continued their journey. Finally, the younger monk confronted the older monk. "How could you have done such a thing? We are not even supposed to be in a woman's presence, but you touched her. You even carried her." The older monk calmly replied, "I put that woman down miles ago, back at the river, but you are still carrying her." There are those who would say that you must be utterly serious about your religious quest, that you can't climb to a higher awareness on a ladder of laughter. On the contrary, I believe that the ability to laugh implies that you have already ascended somewhat. You can't laugh at your or society's folly if you aren't already partway up the ladder, if you are not removed enough from your usual struggles and strivings to see the humor in them. Almost 40 years ago now, when I was minister at the Unitarian Church of Davis, I received a phone call from a member of an ad hoc coalition of Catholics and fundamentalists, mostly. They were calling all Davis clergy to join them in picketing the theater that was playing the film The Life of Brian. Remember that film? That was the movie written by and performed by the British comedy group Monty Python. The movie parodied the era of Jesus and the gullibility of some people who follow and idolize leaders, like the character Brian, a quasi-Jesus figure who had no real message but is involuntarily cast into the role of a prophet. At one point in the film, you can make out Jesus on a hill, and this is the only time Jesus appears, just this figure in white on a hill, giving the Sermon on the Mount. When Jesus says, "Blessed are the peacemakers," a guy in the back of the crowd who can't hear the speech too well says to the guy next to him, "Did he say blessed are the cheesemakers?" The other guy wonders aloud, "Does that include the makers of all dairy products?" Well, scenes like this apparently infuriated the members of the Davis Coalition. They claimed that the film was sacrilegious and insulting to Christianity. Personally, I loved it. I enjoyed its absurdities and its sometimes poignant social commentary. The woman who called soliciting my support for the protest recounted scene after scene in which she said the movie made a mockery of Christianity. But during the course of our telephone exchange, I discovered that she hadn't even seen The Life of Brian. She was just parroting others and pronouncing the movie evil. I finally told her that I enjoyed the film and couldn't support the picket, that I believed that it was healthy for religious people and all people to occasionally laugh at themselves, at their most cherished traditions, and their particular take on reality. In the Middle Ages, through a holiday known as the Feast of Fools, the Christian church was able to enjoy a joke on itself. During the feast, priests and town people who were ordinarily serious put on gaudy costumes and masks and engaged in all kinds of merrymaking and revelry. Clergy painted their faces and donned the vestments of their superiors. A lord of misrule or mock king was elected to preside over the merriment, and in some places a boy bishop celebrated a parody of the mass. There was no religious or courtly ritual or custom that was immune to the satire of the Feast of Fools. People used their comic vision to create a topsy-turvy world where the first are last and the last first, where a child is bishop and a fool is king. This kind of comic vision could be seen in early Christian depictions of Christ as a clown or a fool. I think it's a fitting image. The figure of Jesus has the appeal, the pathos, and the minstrel-like quality of a clown. Like a court jester, Jesus satirized king and tradition, and he turned the world order upside down. The meek shall inherit the earth. The first shall be last, and the last first. This poor carpenter's son came riding into town in mock regal pageantry to meet his fate. His enemies mockingly dressed him in royal garb and crowned him with thorns. Like a clown, Jesus was vulnerable. He was persecuted and humiliated, but ultimately he was the victor. His weapon was love, even for those who mocked and belittled him. Jesus was truly a fool for love. The early depictions of Christ as clown gave way to some more familiar images, and the Feast of Fools gradually died out during the Protestant era. Western culture took on a more serious and solemn tone, in which the virtues of work and ambition were extolled, and too much frivolity was frowned upon. Celebrating holidays like Christmas was forbidden as being too merry and too pagan. We still, to some extent, live under the somber influence of the Protestant work ethic. It affects most of us to some degree, in our ability to take time off to play, or in our guilt feelings for engaging in some activity just for fun. The people who were so incensed by the Monty Python movie are unwitting captives, I believe, to our over-serious post-Reformation era. The Feast of Fools is gone, but its transcendent comic spirit does survive in other events, like New Year's balls, Halloween and its masks and mockery and trickery, in the Mardi Gras festival, and in April Fool's Day. Coincidentally, while preparing today's service, I learned, and this was after I chose the topic of humor for today, I learned that many American Christian churches are now reviving an old Easter custom practiced by early Greek Christian churches and designating the Sunday right after Easter, which this happens to be, as Holy Humor Sunday, where they also enjoy some humor and some laughter. It was a coincidence. I chose today because it was close to April Fool's Day. Or was it coincidence? Yeah. April Fool's Day is a day dedicated to humor, usually in the form of little pranks. Its specific origins go back to the initial confusion among French peasants when, in 1582, the Pope changed the calendar year. Up until then, the new year was April 1st, a few days after the spring equinox. The Pope changed it to January 1st, a few days after the winter solstice. But that first year, in the absence of mass media, some peasants hadn't heard of the change, so they continued to celebrate the new year on April 1st. Those who did so were the target of pranks and were called April Fools, or April Fish, Poisson d'Avril, after the fish that appear in France in early April, fish that are easily caught. The custom of tricks on April 1st spread to the British Isles, where people were sent to buy left-handed hammers, or I'm left-handed, need a left-handed hammer, left-handed hammers or pints of pigeon's milk. And then the tradition was brought here by British settlers. Today we are still subject to or plotters of little acts, little loving acts of deceit. How many of you had a prank pulled on you on Friday, April 1st? Could it be only one? Okay. Well, we need times in our lives. Oh, I got to tell you this. I do remember a great April Fool's prank when I was in college, where the college newspaper on April 1st came out with a headline, "Retention Index Raised to 3.0. People were very upset. I would say we need times in our lives for laughter and for fun, whether it's a designated time like April Fool's Day or whether it's spontaneous. Many of us, too much of the time, are bogged down by the harsh realities of life. We are so busy planning and preparing to live that, in some sense, we forget to just live, to enjoy, to be fully in the present moment. Laughter and humor can help us. In a play written by Jane Wagner, The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, which I happened to see on Broadway some years ago, comedian Lily Tomlin plays a bag lady, a crazy yet wise bag lady, who claims she communicates with aliens who are visiting Earth to determine whether, in fact, there is intelligent life on this planet. In this one-woman play, the bag lady says at one point, "I refuse to be intimidated by reality anymore. After all, what is reality anyway? Nothing but a collective hunch. My space chums," she says, "think reality was once a primitive method of crowd control. I made some studies, and reality is the leading cause of stress among those in touch with it. I can take it in small doses, but as a lifestyle, I find it too confining. If only the rest of us could be so unfettered. With April Fool's Day on Friday, we have entered the first full month of spring, a month whose name may come from the Latin aperire, which means to open. Whether or not that's its etymology, and there is some uncertainty about that, April is indeed a month of opening up. Buds and bulbs tightly closed against winter grow and burst open to reveal their color and their scent. And the earth laughs and flowers, as St. Ralph Waldo Emerson so aptly put it. This month, we can finally throw open our doors and windows to let in the warmed air. And our very lives seem to open up towards spring. We have a hard time sitting still in our indoor desks. So this year, may we all be touched with the comic festival that is spring. And may each of you fully enjoy the season of playfulness. At least at times, may you abandon all reason and become a frolicking April Fool. I'd like to close with the words of the poet Emily Dickinson. A little madness in the spring is wholesome even for the king. But God be with the clown who ponders this tremendous scene, this whole experiment in green, as if it were his own.